Okay.
All right. So during the winter indoor training with the athletic club was really good. It was also great for my French. It was just like Liberty Athletic Club with all the teenage girls. These were teenage boys mostly and some girls. Oh, and we used to go on these long runs, and I learned all this French slang. We used to do these fantastic cross-country workouts, like, you know, 3 times 2,000 meters running, you know, where they have the horse trials. You have to run 5 kilometers to get there, and then you do these 2-kilometer, you know, training new bursts and everything. Oh, I loved it. You get completely sweaty, and I get home, I'd be totally exhausted. I mean, I sometimes think that's the reason I train. I didn't care about the competition. I just like doing this. The training was great. And I met the rowing coaches. I went out in a training session. I actually went into Paris for a training session with the club coach from Fontainebleau was also coaching in Paris. And I went on a training outing with him in Paris. It was really terrible. I mean, there are these junior French national team rowers. They were complaining. They didn't want to do it. So we did. We survived that, and we went to lunch at his house afterwards. And the girls ate all this chocolate pudding. And then the next day, we went to Fontainebleau. We went rowing again, and again the girls were complaining. And then finally, at the end of the day, Jean-Pierre said, "Okay, now I will go out in the single with you." But this time, I was kind of like, "I'll do this." I just was doing that so that we get the key to the boat club, so I could, you know, go open the door to the boathouse, get the boat out, and train. I was doing all this so I could do that. And I was learning about being polite in French and kissing everybody both sides of the cheek. And I was getting a bit fed up. And Jean-Pierre finally came out in the single with me. And after an hour him in the single, even though my French was just, you know, I was still learning the French and everything. Although I was pretty good French because I did it in school. But I, you know, didn't understand him totally. It was like having Chris Korzenowski coach me. This guy was fabulous. He is a great coach. He just had a feeling for the boat, and if he rigged my boat would feel much better. If he went out in a session with me, it would feel better. When we did a training outing with me, he knew about training. He would say, "Okay, this is a quality track workout. I want you to do the first piece at 3/4 power, okay?" And then he would do the first piece, and we would rest a certain amount of time. "Okay, now this piece, you're going to do it at a little bit harder." And then when we get to the next, we get to the third and the fourth, he would say, "Okay, these are the quality pieces. This has to be absolutely full power." And I would do that. And then I would be so tired, I would just go easy on the next two. I mean, that's a much better workout than just thrashing your way through 6 times 500 meters. He was really good. Jean-Pierre coached me in 1985. While I was at business school, I managed to go and with the French rowing team. Jean-Pierre was not a national team in France. He didn't have the certificate. And he worked in the defense industry, so he wasn't allowed. With 1 year, he could have gone to the junior thing. He wasn't allowed to go because it was in East Germany. But he was a really good coach, and he didn't always come with me to the competitions, but he would help me. He would say, "Oh, just go to this part of Paris and get on the French national team bus, and you'll go to this international rowing competition. And I'll put your boat on the French trailer." And I had to borrow a boat. Eventually, I got loaned a really good boat from one of the top boat makers in Europe called Empacher. So in 1985, I went to three international competitions prior to the U.S. trials and the World Championships. Then I went back to the U.S., won the U.S. trials easily because I'd been doing this fantastic training with Jean-Pierre and with the track club. I'd also gone to a lot of cross-country competitions and track competitions with the track team. You know, I was like a good JV runner, you know. And but it was really good for me, and I was really getting very, very confident in the single. I won the singles trials, and then I got 3rd place in the World Rowing Championships. It was the best medal I'd ever won. It was the single. The people in the final were East Germany, Romania, myself, Canada, Austria, and some other, maybe Russia or something. So I was up there with the top rowers from East Germany, and Romania. Romania had rowed, was the Olympic medal winner from 84. Romania had gone to the Olympics in 1984. East Germany hadn't. And East Germany was the favorite, the favorite to win in 1984, but they boycotted. So it was great to be in the same race with them. And that just, from then on, all I would think about then was 1988. And Jean-Pierre stayed with me for the next 3 years. So It was quite an adventure because in 1986, I got really overtrained. I had no financial support. I was doing this on my own steam. I had bought out a student loan to pay for INSEAD. The German boat builder...
Pay for what?
To pay for my business school.
Okay.
And I had a student loan, and I got $1,500 from the women's sports for being a good, you know, a good rower. But my parents couldn't really give me any money, and I didn't have a job. So at the very last term of my business school, I got a job at the business school writing case studies so I could pay for some of the tuition and pay for myself. But during the summer of that year, 1985, I had a job in Paris to pay, and I used to go to the rowing club in the morning on Fontainebleau, and there was no shower. I had to put a hose over my head, put others' clothes on, go to the train station. It was a disaster of a job, but at least I earned some money. And So getting ready for the 1988 Olympics, you know, students at the INSEAD, they used to have this big lunch. I didn't really have any money to have the lunch. And plus I was training, so I didn't have good nutrition. I crashed in 1986. So what does that mean? That means all of a sudden my performance went down. I wasn't up to my normal self. I won the trials easily in 1986. But my performance in the international championships dipped. I had won a trip to the Goodwill Games, but when I got to the Goodwill Games in Moscow in 19, you know, was in Gorbachev was the leader, I think, and it was this friendship between U.S. and Russia, and I had one of the worst rows in my life, and I came last. It was only one other rower, Russia, and I had beaten her before, and she beat me in this competition, and by that time I had finished INSEAD. And I had gotten a job at J.P. Morgan Asset Management in London. I had started working in London. My work permit hadn't worked out, so I had to spend... I was actually based in New York. It was a complete mess. Jean-Pierre came over to New York, and we trained on the Harlem River. And we trained on the Harlem River during the week. We trained at Princeton on the weekend. We used to camp out at Princeton at the boathouse on the weekend. And I had my racing boat at Princeton. And we had some good times. We went up to Concord one day... did some training on the Merrimack, and Jean-Pierre made lobster thermidor for my parents in Concord. It was great. But before all the New York thing happened, so I had done the trials in the U.S. I was working for J.P. Morgan, training in the U.S. because I started working at J.P. Morgan and I moved to New York in May, late May 1986. Did the trials. I won that. I went back to work. I went to a competition. Then I had won this trip to the Goodwill Games at the end of July. And so off I went to the Goodwill Games. And it was really catching up to me. That was when I was really down. I'd already shown signs of it, but this was when I was really down. And I went to this competition in Switzerland on the way to the Goodwill Games in Moscow. The competition in Switzerland is called the ROTSE. It's the big competition of the year prior to the World Championships. And I had done poorly there. So I thought, well, I may as well just carry on training. So when I got to the Goodwill Games, I was even worse. And after the end of it, Jean-Pierre wasn't there. And there were a bunch of U.S. coaches. They didn't say anything to me. It was the Russian coach that came up to me, two of them, because I spoke some Russian. And they sat down and they said, okay, you need help. This is what you should do. And they told me day one, day two, day three. And they had like 14 days, 2 weeks, I think it was even longer, where every day they told me what to do, which was basically nothing. They said, run 2 kilometers, jog 2 kilometers, paddle 3 kilometers, jog 2 kilometers, paddle 3 kilometers, do some stretch. You know, they said, don't train. And they gave me a big lecture about what I had done wrong and how I needed it. But anyway, so that was a great thing that I took home with me from the Goodwill Games. And the other thing is kind of interesting is that I didn't want to go home with nothing. So after my race was over, it was terrible. I took the boat. We were at the rowing canal. It was about 15 kilometers outside of Moscow. And it's right next to the Moscow River, so I snuck my boat over to the Moscow River, and I rode almost all the way to the Kremlin, just because I could, because nobody could touch me. I was an American. I was on the Goodwill Games. You know, they were going to protect me, weren't they? So I went, the police boat came and told me to turn around and go back. So I asked for some water in Russian. They gave me some water in a glass, you know. And so I came, after that, I felt like I had done something. I had at least rode to the Kremlin. And then I did my rest, and I improved a lot. And I came fifth place in the World Championships in Nottingham that year with a bad cold. I had won my semifinal. So I was, you know, it wasn't great, but I was back in business. And then Monica, who I rode with in 1983 Pan American Games, I forgot to tell you that she lost her father in 1985. And when I was living in France and getting trained by Jean-Pierre in 1985, she came over and spent a couple weeks with me, and we raced together in the double in Lucerne. And that's when I got a bronze medal in the single and a silver medal in the double with Monica. So that was one of our other races together. And also we won the national championships in the double in 1986. And she then went on to compete in the Olympics, but not with me in the boat. So I always felt really bad about that. And I was very sad when she died about 5 years ago of brain cancer. And anyway, so after 1986, I thought to myself, actually, 1986, I did try to row with Monica again. So I'm getting this a bit mixed up. So I thought, Monica, this is where I made the mistake. I was didn't get my work permit to work at J.P. Morgan in London. So I was working in J.P. Morgan in New York. So Monica was in California. This other lady named Barb Kirsch was in Philadelphia. So I started doing some training with Monica, but I thought she needed competitions. I said, look, I will either row with Monica or with Barb Kirsch. Because, when I was training in the fall of 1986, so I had finished the World Championships in 1986. I had finished INSEAD. I had started working at J.P. Morgan, but I was in New York because I failed my work permit. I was living in New York, but on weekends, Jean-Pierre was in France. I was training on my own. On weekends, I kept going to Princeton. And one day, I would go to Princeton. I didn't have my racing boat there. I had a training boat. It was really slow. And I was rowing there. I would go there. In the morning, I would do 20 kilometers. And then at lunch, I would run hills. I'd run up from the boathouse up to the top of Nassau Street. That's about a mile up, mile down, mile up, mile down. I'd do like five of those or something. I mean, maybe it wasn't quite a mile, but it was a long workout. And then I would do another row in the afternoon. I'd do that on a Saturday. Then on Sunday, I would do another long row. And then I would go back to New York, and I might do weights or something. That was my weekend.
I'm going to have to pause here.
Yeah, so in 1986, I had a pretty good result in the single, but I was really wanted to get a medal in the Olympics. And also, I was really intrigued by the result I'd had with Monica in the double. So in 1987, I ended up rowing in the double instead of the single, not with Monica, but with Barb. We got a bronze medal. So going into 1988, it was really difficult. So what I thought I would do was double up. So Barb and I tried to double up. She, like Monica, was injury prone. She felt she succumbed to an injury. So I ended up just doing the single with Jean-Pierre. And by that time, I was in pretty good shape, but on paper, I was only fourth place. There was East Germany, Bulgaria, Romania, all ahead of me, plus possibly Russia. So maybe I was only fourth or fifth at best. So I thought to myself about that training camp I did back in 1978 when I first was on the sculling training camp at Lake Tahoe. That's high altitude. I thought, why don't I try high altitude? So off I went to the Donner Lake. And after I did all my pre-Olympic competitions, bronze medal in Lucerne. So the big competition prior to the Olympics was Lucerne. I got third place. The lake in Lucerne is in, that's where we do the rowing with the big competition in Switzerland. I got bronze medal. Then from then on, no more competitions until the Olympics. High altitude training camp. Donner Lake, you know, it's way up in the mountains, right?
In
Nevada, in California. California, Donner Lake, Truckee, think of the Donner Pass.
Okay, so there you are, the high country.
And my Aunt Joyce, my late Aunt Joyce, she's from the Donner family. So I was quite interested in that, but it's a kind of an episode in American history we don't want to talk about too much. But everybody knows, everybody's heard about the Donner Pass, all the cannibalism and everything with the wagon trains. So there's a lake up there that I trained on, and I trained on the lake at high altitude where you kind of lose your breath really quickly, and it alters your blood composition, so you have more oxygen carrying capacity in your blood. And I chose Donner Lake because you could then go down to San Francisco, get a flight from San Francisco to Tokyo, and then Tokyo to Seoul. That's where the Olympics were. So that worked out brilliantly. I had to fight. I had Jean-Pierre. He wasn't really accepted by the U.S. team as a coach. When I went to get my, I had to fly down just for the day to L.A. to get my Olympic equipment, you know, all my clothes and everything. And I was talking on the phone to the team manager, and I said, well, what about Jean-Pierre? They said, well, we're sending your ticket to go down there for the day, and you won't, you know, you could go back to high altitude that night. I said, okay, great. High altitude. Because you got to be up there. You got to stay up there for the blood thing to work. So I said, what about Jean-Pierre's ticket? They said, oh, he's French. He can't be on the team. I said, well, what do you mean? He's my coach. So that was a battle I won. I won the battle. Jean-Pierre came with me, and he got all this stuff. So he was quite pleased. Anyway, Jean-Pierre, because he wasn't allowed to be on the French team because he didn't have the certificate. So then we went to the Olympics, and you know, I was a lot small. Well, I wasn't – the Bulgarian wasn't that big, but the – East German had won a lot of world championships. My best place had been silver medal in the 1984 without the Eastern Europeans, and bronze medal in the single, and bronze medal in the double. So, you know, I wasn't really that highly touted. I had a really good competition. I had easy, the heat was easy. I was rowing at a very low rate. So in the big competitions, you want to be rowing like 35 strokes per minute. I was rowing my heat at rate 25 because I was so far ahead. In the semifinal, I had East Germany, and East Germany won the semifinal. I came second, and I was telling myself I was holding back, but I kind of was worried about her. And then I had a great final, and what happened was the favorite was Bulgaria, and I now know that Bulgaria and East Germany were all taking steroids and everything. And the East German lady, she has admitted to it, and the Bulgarian lady, it was very clear because the following years, she was completely changed. She wasn't anywhere near as strong as she was. And Bulgarian lady had won the world championships in 1987. She had won the Rotse competition in Lucerne, where I came third. And she went off to a really, really fast start in the final. And the East German went after her, and I mean, a lot of people said, oh, well, the East German broke the Bulgarian. And once the East German was catching up with the Bulgarian, she just blew up, and I went past her as well. So maybe I owe everything to the East German. But anyway, it felt great for me coming in second place. And, you know, obviously I wish I had won the gold medal, but I'm very proud of having won a silver medal for the U.S. I took the following year off. By this time, I was working full-time at J.P. Morgan. By this time, I was working in London. I was doing a lot of my training in London on the tidal, just like the Swampscott, where I learned to row. And I carried on, this time with an East German coach. And even though I only got fourth place in the 1992 Olympics, I felt that I was at the top of my game. I had moved on. I had improved. My times were faster. My first 1,000 meter was faster. My start was faster. I was very, very competitive. And I just think I had I didn't do it on the day. I have personal reasons why I think something happened, but I'm very proud of my fourth place finish in Barcelona. And I'm also very proud to have competed in Boston at the head of the Charles many, many times, including 7 victories in the Women's Championship single with all the local crowd cheering me on. That's been fantastic, and I want to thank all those people that are cheering me and wish everybody luck in the 2016 Olympics, including Jevie Stone, who's the daughter of Lisa and Greg, who visited my parents, my uncle's ranch and sheep station in New Zealand in 1978. So we've come a long way since then.
This gives me chills to think about her doing it now. I gotta ask why you flew on your own steam, I hear, back to Concord for this time to do interviews and the panel. I mean, What is it about Concord that's staying with you in the middle of such an incredibly rich life you've been living?
Well, I have a very active life in the UK, and my daughters are on a rowing team, so I'm a rowing mom, which means, you know, driving around to lots of practices, packing food all the time. She has to take food with her to school, because otherwise she would go hungry, because they don't give her enough at school. So I'm very busy at that. I'm involved in financial market integrity in the UK, which is a very important theme, a very important thing I believe in. So I'm very, very busy. But also, I'm from Concord, and my parents still live at 1325 Lowell Road, and they're in their 80s, and my brothers, sisters, and I are delighted to be looking after our parents as they age, and that means we're in Concord as much as we possibly can. Also, I wanted to thank John Bigelow, because in a lot of ways I did it for John Bigelow, because he's a single scholar like me, and every single scholar has... I mean, the only single scholar who is a total cheerleader and has a totally flawless individual is Joan Lind. I mean, she's beyond belief. And the rest of us, you know, we were driven by some demons. And I wanted to make sure I did this when John asked me.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful story. Thank you so much. Really put your heart in this.